everybody. Welcome to episode 403 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode, and in today's episode, Manny and I are going to be talking about Port of Earth, issue number 7, from the creative team of writer Zach Kaplan. The art is handled by Andrea Muti, and I think he does the color. No, the colors are by Vladimir Popov. That's right. So it's an incredible book. It's winding down. I think issue 8 is the last issue of the series, and I'm gonna kind of be sad to see it go. It's got such a different feel, and there's nothing like it. Nothing else like it on the stands. I love the dual narrative that Zach's been telling throughout the series, and there's a lot of unanswered questions, so it's got to all wrap up with one more issue. So what did you think of issue 7, Manny?
Issue 7 is great. Definitely setting up issue 8. As always, yeah, like you're saying, the dual narrative. God, I cannot stand I said that guy in the beginning. I mean, just so frustrating. Like when the reporters asking the ESA director Tom Rutgers all those questions, and he just like gives like the sleaziest political answers like every time, and every issue. I'm like, God damn it! Kaplan did it again. Got me all frustrated reading the book. Yeah, but I like the. I liked it because it's exploring something that I've been curious about from the beginning. So I think we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go along.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember you got all fired up when Zach was on and we did a spotlight, I think, when the first trade was about to come out, when we talked about, you know, the right or wrong of it, right? I think you and I did a spotlight, and then we had Zach on to talk about it as well. You know, we're breaking it down. It's like, man, on the surface, it seems like originally such a great deal, right? Like, hey, let these aliens come to Earth, and all they need is like ocean water, right? That we have plenty of, and they can turn it into energy and fuel their ships. And, you know, they're going to give the water engine to technology to humanity, and it's going to be great for the planet. And, you know, on paper, it like sounded so good. And then we were breaking down like the things that happened in the issue. And we're like, man, they really did make a bad deal. And this issue, it's like the questions that I can never remember what the reporter's name is. But yeah, she's asking Tom Rutgers these, like starting to get at like the nitty gritty of it. And even she, and I imagine all the people that are watching this interview, you have to realize, I mean, Rutgers himself has to realize he's not coming across very well. It's like, wait, what did we do? Who thought this was a good idea?
Yeah.
It's so kind of obvious, you know? So let me break down the issue. Let me give a quick summary of the issue, and then we'll get into some more details. So the first page is really cool because it gives a lot of details about the Port of Earth. It's 8,444,200 square feet, and it generates 122 tons of water fuel an hour. It can dock up to 24 ships at a time and host up to 2,304 life forms in over 144,000 possible environmental habitats. It even has its own automated security. So who designed the port? Well, the consortium offered the planet Earth a variety of ports to choose from. So different sizes, capacity, security features. And the configuration, every configuration was considered, but this configuration they chose was supposedly the best for the planet and the relationship with the consortium. So as far as other knowledge, like she asks, how many galactic ports does the consortium have? Don't know. How large do the ports get? Don't know. What other arrangements does the consortium offer besides ports? No idea. Do we know anything about any other consortium ports in the galaxy? No. So let me understand this. Group of aliens show up We don't know who they are, nothing about them, where they came from. They offer this deal, and we don't ask any questions. We just say, all right, we make the deal. And Tom Rutker says, we make the best deal. How do you know you made the best deal? You don't have any context. You don't have anything to compare it to. You have no idea if these people really are who they say they are, or their humans aren't allowed in the port. You don't have any idea what they're actually doing. They could be like mining the center of the earth and ruining our planet for all you know. You have no idea what they're actually doing. They're so far technologically advanced. Who knows? So then the port is built, and it's all automated process. We don't build the port. They do, because they can do it faster, supposedly. All they needed was earth-based materials. And once the port's built, then there's a naval blockade around it, supposedly to protect human beings. So humans don't go to port. In fact, no human has ever been on the port. And to add to the idea of we let Big Brother in, the humans don't run the port security because it has its own automated security. And the automated security is like controlled by a consortium mothership that's in orbit and oversees port security. So then she asks, well, and the port of Earth itself is not the ESA's jurisdiction. Is that right? He's like, that's one interpretation. Yes. How could there be any other interpretation? The Earth Security Agency agents are human. They're not even allowed in the port. They're not allowed inside the port. So how could that possibly be their jurisdiction? So then the reporter's like, and after 1.5 years of these alien visitors killing human beings, ESA agents have never pursued aliens to the port, but these agents, Rice and McIntyre, had the authority, or interpreted that they had the authority to pursue aliens into the port. And he's like, this is a rare circumstance. And I love this exchange. She's like, they stole a news helicopter, commandeered only 2 agents after a deadly alien. We were under attack. And she calls him out on it totally. She's like, yeah, it's clear that this all happened in the heat of the moment. And whatever happened, the ESA now supports this quote-unquote rare response. But really, it was those 2 agents acting on their own, really, which we'll come to see in a second here. And then she has one last question. She's like, so was it because the ESA was attacked that these agents followed this alien? Or was it because the visiting consortium representatives were attacked? Who are we protecting here, humans or aliens? And that's been a theme throughout the book. Like, you know, the ESA agents are always supposed to protect humans and aliens, but when push comes to shove, it seems like the aliens always take the priority because the powers that be don't want to upset the consortium. They don't want to upset the aliens and lose their technology, lose their cushy deal that they made that helps them, the less than 1%, we'll call them, but really is hosing everybody else on Earth. So then we're basically moving back in time now. We're back with Agents Rice and McIntyre. They're on the news helicopter that they stole/commandeered. They're heading to the port. They're chasing the alien that we saw from last issue who attacked the consortium representatives that were visiting Earth at the ESA headquarters. And they still have the little drone following them outside the helicopter. But the pilot's like, hey, we're approaching the naval blockade. We should probably turn around. And like, nope. Rice is like, nope, we're going after him. He's really completely flipped. If you heard the interview I did with Zach Kaplan from Denver Comic Con, we talked about how the roles of McIntyre and Rice really have flipped based on Rice losing his girlfriend and, you know, just putting up with this crap for too long. So even though the helicopter pilot wants to turn around, he's threatened by the naval blockade that they're going to shoot him down. Rice is talking to the Navy saying, hey, we're ESA agents. We're pursuing, you know, we're in hot pursuit of an alien assassin. Don't shoot us down. And McIntyre's like, dude, maybe we should turn around. The helicopter pilot's like, I'm landing. And Rice is like, no, just like steady on. Pretty soon we'll be so close to the port they won't be able to fire on us. They're not going to fire. Don't worry. And he ends up being right. They don't end up firing, although he does have to put his weapon to the back of the head of the helicopter pilot to get him to continue. So they land. They go inside the port. First humans to ever be inside there. But even so, the technology senses that they're human and apparently senses they speak English because it tells them in English, welcome to the port of Earth, scans them, detects Homo sapien DNA, and then gives them some suits to wear to protect them from the different environments they're going to encounter inside the port. So once they get the suits on, they decide they're going to actually travel through habitat to habitat rather than walking through the main terminal that'll be crawling with other aliens. They don't want that kind of attention. They find a reader on the wall that basically matches the aliens. It finds the habitat that's most suited for the alien who is an alien of the type that was the assassin. They basically find where that type of alien stays when they're in the port. So they kind of have an idea of where to go. And then they start traveling through the port, through all these fantastical, different kind of landscapes. Some are alien or insect-like. Some are more jungle-like with what looks like mammals, insects, spiders, all kinds of crazy stuff. And then eventually they come to the habitat that has the type of alien that was the assassin. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's a very strange name. Quatil? It's Q-O-T-I-L apostrophe S. So, I mean, in the English language, a U always follows a Q, but not in this particular alien language or name or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, maybe Quattle, I'm guessing. I don't know, I'll have to ask Zach next time I see him. So, yeah, they travel through. They get to the Quattle environment, habitat, and they spot the alien. They chase after it, and then they end up confronted by actually three of them. And I certainly can't tell them apart. I don't know that they, Rice and McIntyre, that is, can tell them apart either. But that's where the issue ends. So, yeah, we're leaving our heroes in grave danger, I would say, in the port with only one issue to go. And there is a sneak peek for issue 8 cover. And it doesn't necessarily look like it's working out too well for Rice and McIntyre. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, this was a great issue. One thing about it, though, was the fact that most of the issues, the two different narratives are interspersed, right? Like you get a few pages of the reporter and Tom Rucker's talking, and then you get a few pages of the agents and then a few more pages of Rucker's. This one had all the Rutger stuff up front and then all the Rice and McIntyre stuff in the back. It's interesting that Zach made that choice. I don't know if he did it just because of having it make more sense story-wise to allow Andrea Moody to kind of showcase all the different alien environments. Would have been weird because there's actually quite a few panels without any words where we just get a chance to check out the different alien environments. But it's great to finally see the inside of the port. But even more – and that's what I was most looking forward to about this issue actually. But then once I actually read it, I think my favorite part of this issue is just how – the reporter kind of really flips the script on Rutgers, on Tom Rutgers, and makes him look like an idiot, right? Like the way she words her questions, and it's like, yeah, she's on board with like our thoughts. Like, why would anybody make this deal? It's such a bad deal. Yeah, so he comes out not looking too good in my mind. So what do you think, Manny?
I think you're right. Yeah, I like that part. I mean, it almost seems like by the end of it, he's starting to question himself, the decisions he's made. I like how a lot of, I don't know if this is what Zach is intending to do, but he's really foreshadowing just politics in general, how they work, where sometimes it's not necessarily what's important for everyone, but what's important to keep you in power or to get you ahead. And then, you know, once you make the deal, it's the best deal at the time for you, but not for everyone else, because you're seeing the repercussions of it now. I mean, just looking at everything they gave up for this port, all of a sudden, there's no win-win here for anyone, especially now that aliens are attacking people, and now you see what's happening here. So it's really interesting, and the cover actually for the next issue gives me the idea that it's not going to end well for our two quote-unquote heroes, because I have a feeling politics are going to get involved, and once again, the suit are going to cover it up, and I'm going to be so mad, but that just...
Yeah, I could definitely see it going that way too. If you know they're lauded as heroes, you know, to the Earth's population, when really they're, you know, stuck in some alien prison somewhere. But it brings up an interesting point. What makes me think that could possibly happen? It's like, so during the questioning of Tom Rutgers, the reporter calls him on that as well, right? She's like, yeah, so no human, you know, you don't have jurisdiction inside the port. No human's ever been inside the port. But then all of a sudden there's this quote-unquote rare circumstance, this rare occurrence, and Rice and McIntyre are allowed to go inside the port. It sounds to me like they acted in the heat of the moment, and then now you're justifying it after. Now you're saying afterwards to cover your own butt. Because, right, Tom Rutgers, he doesn't want the general populace of Earth to know his agents are out there running around as, like, loose cannons. Then it looks bad on him, right? But to his credit, you know, maybe he's not all bad. He didn't just throw him to the wolves and say, yeah, they had no authority. We told them to stop and they didn't. He could have done that and left him hanging out to dry. But again, I mean, maybe he's worried that that reflects poorly on him as the leader of the ESA. But to me, the fact that they're the Earth Security Agency really doesn't mean anything, because they haven't managed to stop these aliens from killing humans at will, because these aliens have these, you know, abilities that basically they're not equipped to deal with, except with, like, lethal response, right? Except they're not allowed to kill aliens. They've got to protect aliens and they've got to protect humans. But again, when it comes to push comes to shove, everybody, all the powers that be, always seem to want to err on the side of the alien. Like, the aliens get to go and kill humans, and then they let them go? Doesn't make sense. Like, if you were to flip that around, like, say an alien left the port, which is technically breaking the law, they're told when they get there, they're not supposed to leave the port. So an alien does leave the port, and some human feels threatened and kills it, you think they're just going to let the human go? Like, they just let these aliens go after they go and eat elementary school children or devour people on a cruise ship? No, they're not going to let the human just go. The human's going to get tried and convicted of murder, and God knows what would happen to them. So it definitely doesn't work both ways. It definitely seems like the aliens get the preferential treatment. So it is a very political book. I no idea how Zach is going to wrap everything up in one more issue. I mean,
plot twist: Tom Rutgers is an alien.
That could be.
I don't know. That just there's a random thought that came into my head.
Or he could be being controlled by some kind of, I mean, who knows? We have no idea. But yeah, only one issue left. I'm pretty sure, knowing Zach, he probably has more stories he could tell in this setting. So maybe everything won't get wrapped up in issue 8. Maybe there'll still be some questions unanswered. But yeah, I go back to the fact that this book is unlike anything else out there on the stands. I love it. It's part of what made me fall in love with Think Tank. At the time, there was absolutely nothing like it on the stands. I feel like Zach's other book, Eclipse from Top Cow, is kind of the same way. He knows what he's doing when it comes to writing this political stuff. He loves to play in that gray area and make you think about the politics of the particular worlds and stories he's creating. You know, the gray area, how you can see both sides. Although it's becoming harder and harder to see how anybody could think this deal that the Earthlings made was a good deal. You know, yeah, you got the water engine, and yeah, it made a very small amount of people really, really rich. But based on what it did to the economy, and based on the aliens coming to Earth and eating people, literally, it's not really looking like it's a good deal at all. And the fact that when the powers that be, the decision makers, made their choice, they didn't bother to ask any questions or do any research. They just said, you know, oh, this is going to make me rich. Let me sign. I really would hope that we wouldn't be so kind of blinded by the wonder of first contact to make some terrible deal like this. But I mean, who knows?
It's probably something that would happen if you really think about it.
Well, what I would be worried about is, I mean, we weren't there, and who knows? Zach hasn't hinted at it at all, but these aliens, this consortium, they obviously are far advanced, you know, as far as technology, and that also means weapons. So there could have been some, hey, we're going to build this port on Earth, aren't we? We're going to give you the water engine, aren't we? Yeah, you're going to say yes, aren't you? We sure wouldn't want to see what would happen if you didn't. That would be a bad choice, you know? I mean, who knows?
Well, it does take me back to a certain part of the interview where she's asking him about the deal that they were offered. And then she says, and without any more knowledge, we made a deal. And it's the next panel shows him. I don't know, just the way it's drawn, he's kind of looking up to the alien, kind of a little intimidated, I would say. But then the third panel, the bottom panel on that page, it says, we make the best deal.
Yeah.
But by the look of his face, though, I think he's relieved that they're walking away. So you may be onto something there, too.
Yeah, we make the best deal because the deal we made that allowed them to build their port on Earth also allowed us to continue to live as a species instead of them just wiping us out and building a port here anyway. So it's something that I haven't even really considered until now, and I'm not exactly sure what made me think of it. But yeah, that's the line I was thinking about too. So we just make a deal. No, we don't just make a deal. We make the best deal because it ensures that we're all going to be able to get up in the morning. So it's definitely something to consider.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because that would flip the script really quick of them from kind of villains to heroes, because they're not necessarily doing what's best for them. They're trying to do what's best for humanity, even though it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, boy, I'm not really ready to see Tom Rutgers as a hero at all. Not at all, but that's interesting. Yeah, and so this just came out on the 11th of July. That means we have another month to go before we get the final issue and get answers. Well,
maybe we can get some answers next week.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, though. Do I really want that? I don't want Zach to tell me. But if he had a copy of issue 8, I sure would read it. I'd be like, yeah, can I proofread this for you? I mean, it's only a month away. It's already gone to the printers. So yeah, Matt has a copy on his Mac. So, yeah. Again, though, this is what I love about this story, you know, how here we are, we've been reading it all along, right? All 7 issues we've read, and we didn't come across that idea until just now, all of a sudden. So yeah, it's what I love about the story. It's what I love about the setting and the world. And it's like why I mentioned that there's nothing else like this on the stands. It's so good. It's so political. It's so, I don't want to say ambiguous, but there's so many different ways that it could go, right? There's so much that we don't know. And so, yeah, it's such an interesting story and so much fun to speculate. And it's why I hope that Zach can, either go back and visit this world some more and tell some more stories in it, or even better, like keep writing, Zach. Keep writing, keep coming up with great story ideas like this, because, you know, between Eclipse, which has been amazing, and we talked a little bit about Eclipse, which returns with issue 9 coming up in August. And Zach was just on last week, I believe, or maybe the week before, to talk about issue 9. Right before the final order cutoff. And he also gave advice about breaking in as a creative and how similar that is to being successful at poker, which was a really fun conversation. So, but yeah, if you haven't listened to that episode, I really encourage you to go back and check it out. Because one thing Zach mentioned there is that it's not about your one idea as a writer. You know, Top Cow's not going to necessarily hire you to write your one big idea. You've got to have a lot of ideas. And Matt Hawkins told me the same thing when I saw him recently in Vegas. He's like, yeah, when you come to pitch for me, you better have more than one idea, because you pitch, you know, your one idea. And even if I like it, I'm going to be like, okay, what else you got? I'm not really interested in writers who have just one idea. It's like, I want writers who have, you know, 100 ideas for stories, because once you invest in a creator, you want to get a good return on your investment, right? You want more than just one story. So I think Top Cow's really hit a jackpot with Zach, between Eclipse and now Port of Earth. And he does have a third title coming out currently, The Lost City Explorers from Aftershock. And yeah, I really can't wait to see, what he has next. And unfortunately it won't be announced at San Diego Comic Con, from what he told me. He was like, yeah.
Really unique ideas, just really good. I mean, last year at Comic-Con is when we got the Port of Earth announcement, yeah. So you never know what we can get this year.
Yeah.
Just super unique ideas.
Yeah, Zach was like, this is the first Comic-Con in like 3 Comic-Cons I'm not going to have anything to announce. Or will I? So I got the feeling that he didn't necessarily have anything new to announce. But if it turns out that that's not the case, I'll certainly be excited. I'm a fan of Zach for life. The guy's a great writer and a really cool guy to talk to and hang out with and everything. Yeah, that Top Cow panel's at a really bad time for me though. Trying to figure out how to split myself in two. Cause I need to cover 2 panels that are literally at the exact same time. So trying to get that worked out. So we'll see. Anyway, anything else you want to say about Port of Earth number 7?
No, I think we covered it all. It's a great issue. I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say is Andrew Moody's art, man. It's great to see him be able to draw all these alien landscapes. It's really fun. I've only read the issue twice. I'm probably going to have to go back and just do like an art read where I just look at those alien landscapes. And check out the detail and the weirdness that Andrea puts down on the page. Really, really incredible job. And the colors by Vladimir Popov continue to really help set the mood as well. So kudos to the entire creative team. And, of course, Troy Pateri on letters, one of the busiest. I think he letters like all Top Cow's books. Guy's very prolific and really, really good. We don't want to forget and overlook our letterers, the unsung heroes of comics, a very thankless job. Nobody notices when it's done well and it's done right, but you will hear them complain to no end when a book is lettered incorrectly or a word balloon is put somewhere where it's covering up art and all that kind of stuff. So, all right, I guess that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, we want to thank everybody for joining us. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform or app you use on your phone or tablet. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you are at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All 3 spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. As Manny and I mentioned, and we've been talking about for the past month, I guess, we'll be at San Diego Comic-Con in less than a week's time. If you're going to be there, please let us know. We'd love to meet up with you. Just hit us up on Twitter or Instagram, Facebook. We'll meet up with you, take a picture, hook you up with some free stuff like Comic Source lanyards, And you can tell us what you like about the show, maybe even what you don't like. So once again, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.